B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Outside of the 15-hour drive that you're going to have to make, are you excited to just get back to some sort of normalcy?
I know, man, because like I need some kind of like discipline in my life right now, because like right now I'm like waking up late and just eating whatever. I just practice like working out whenever I want to work out. But like I think once you are in Boston, I think my life going to be in like a little more discipline. And I'm going to be like more focused, you know, because when you're not in Boston, you're just like, your head is all over the world.
All right. On the one end, I appreciate the honesty from Enes Kanter, center of the Boston Celtics. That from the Enes Kanter podcast, NBC Sports Boston with Chris Forsberg. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. I appreciate the honesty. I do. And I think he's honest in every aspect of his life. It's one of the reasons I really like Kanter here. Greatest player in the world? No, but, you know, seems like a hell of a guy. So I appreciate it. You're on the Jim Murray plan. Sleeping late, eating whatever you want, not a lot of discipline. That's one way to live your life if you've just had it with the pandemic and the increasingly hell times that we're living in that are getting worse by the day.
But that's how you got where you are today.
Yes.
Same for Enes Kanter.
The Jim Murray plan.
The Jim Murray plan.
Sleep till noon, not a lot of discipline, eat whatever the hell you want. Ice cream at midnight? Sure, why not? More everything.
Yeah.
But as a professional athlete, even if you're not like the superstar of the team or you're not a Kemba Walker,
yeah.
Enes, what are you doing? Jesus. Like, so if he's saying this, what's the rest of the league look like? What's a Nikola Jokic going to look like when he comes back for the Denver Nuggets? You know what I mean? Like, and they were the two seed, right, in the West when that got shut down? Three? Either way, some of these guys, oh, my God. I'm a Zion fan, but you know, he also did blow up his sneaker at one point. Like, he's a...
Oh, that's a great point.
Bit of a chubby bunny. You know, it wouldn't take much. Especially being down in New Orleans, where there's the greatest cuisine in America. That's a fact, not opinion.
A lot of takeout beignets for him, you're saying?
Well, etouffee, everything is just, it's the best. Po' boys, like you can't, I wouldn't be able to stop. So is he going to come back looking like Sean Kemp did 20 years ago after that strike? I think that's as a sports fan, again, I respect the honesty of Enes Kanter, but also hearing that, it's like, oh no, like what's this league going to look like? Who's going to be fat? Because there's definitely going to be guys that have put on the COVID-19.
You know who I think could be a sneaky guy who maybe is like drinking a lot of booze and just eating a lot of sweets and like, you know, could really... Luka Doncic.
Yeah, there could be any of these guys.
Like, I feel like Luka could come back a little pudgy, like, you know, a little out of shape. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned Kyle Lowry. A lot of junk in the trunk of him anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what's, you know, so getting into the poutine up in Toronto, you know, so I think this is... And look, them being professional athletes, they have trainers, and even if they're virtually training, and their cardio is certainly better than yours or I's ever will be, Chris, they'll be able to get themselves back into, I don't know, game shape, but good shape within a 5 to 6 week window. You know, cut weight, eat better, do all that. But I don't know. I think it's going to be difficult for some guys, especially in terms of if their mental health, like it has, I think, for most of us, if not all, has been affected here during this pandemic, and as things seem to get worse by the day as the country burns, they just say, like, the mentality is like, oh, the hell with this. Yeah, I'll come back, but, you know, I'll give you 30% rather than 100% because who the hell cares anyway? You know, there's going to be some guys that show up. You can't be shocked in any of these leagues when someone shows up and they're just not in it. You know,
I mean, my concern is, look, I think they'll have the training camp. They'll be able to get them in some semblance of shape. But there's a difference between that and being in NBA game shape. And my concern is maybe guys that try and go, you know, too hard too soon in those 8 regular season games, if they play them and some guy blows out a knee or ends up getting hurt. You know, if there's some career altering injury here, that would be a big concern for me if I were one of these teams.
B-Rub.
Like if I were Phoenix, I'd be like, I don't want to come back because I don't want Devin Booker to potentially get hurt. Then my franchise is screwed.
Are you hearing anything on this? We've had Kevin Mannix on Felger and Maz throughout the last 3 months, you know, here and there. And I've asked them this a few times, like, who are you hearing? Who's gotten fat? Because he has said in talking to league executives, like, that's a concern that some of these guys are going to come back and be huge.
No, there's no question about it. And even look at Kanter when he even came back this season already. He still was battling an injury and was kind of on the outskirts of the rotation. So add 3 months to that, and it could be dicey. But from at least a Southers perspective, it seems they don't have a lot of guys you would worry about in this front outside of Kanter. I guess that's good news for them. Like Jaylen Brown, I mean, we know Tatum had the hoop situation, but he's, you know, thin as a rail. You kind of want him to stay in shape. Hayward, etc. They're not a lot of big guys there, but there's no question. If you look at Embiid, Like you said, Jokic is a perfect example, Jim. These are the guys that you have to worry about from a shape standpoint, just given their track record. And the NBA, to its credit, at least they're going to give them a 2-month runway here to kind of figure this out before the games are supposed to begin on July 31st. And that should be enough for most guys, but it might not be enough for everyone, obviously.
I meant Chris Mannix, by the way. I always get that mixed up. Kevin Mannix was with the old grades for the Patriots and the Boston Herald. No, it was Chris Mannix. But how does this potentially benefit the Celtics? You know, they've had the time off here. Kemba Walker's knee before the shutdown was obviously problematic. Yeah.
Rob Williams, too, with the hip.
Oh, right, right.
That's a good point.
So, I don't know, like, are they, and other guys are going to be back now, too. Ben Simmons is now going to be back with the 76ers. But, I don't know, does this ultimately benefit the Celtics?
I think it does. Chris mentioned the Grizzly standpoint of it for the future of the draft pick. But seeding-wise, you don't want to face Philly at a neutral court in the first round. And that's what would have happened if they went to top 16. But if with the new format and with the fact that you have a full slate of, you know, Kemba's knee, hopefully. Jaylen Brown had a hamstring injury, too, when the season stopped. And so if you're a top-heavy team like Boston that relies on 6 or 7 guys to play, you know, 40 minutes probably in the postseason, and you eventually get a full offseason to rest here and build yourself back up, I think that benefits them a lot more than teams that are just deeper.
Yeah, I think it could certainly benefit them from the standpoint of Kemba. I mean, that knee, we talked about it before. He was getting the Synvisc injections, and he didn't really look like Kemba before the shutdown. So we'll see. I mean, I'm curious what it will look like when he comes back, and is it one of those situations where obviously the time off benefits him, but is it one of those injuries, if it's a cartilage deal, where it's just if he has to play, and this schedule is going to be condensed to a degree, we know that, if he has to play a lot of games in a short period of time, it's just going to flare up again.
Yeah, any of these setups that they're talking about, too, it feels like they kind of get screwed and that they would have to face the 76ers in that first round. And I'm still of the belief that that's one of those teams. They remind me a lot of last year's Celtics, that it's like a lot of talent on the floor, on paper. If they were able to get their collective crap together, they're a bad matchup, just in terms of size alone. If Embiid were to play, like, they're a bad matchup for the Celtics. And they kind of had their number a bit before everything got shut down this year. So, I don't know. Ultimately, though, if everyone was healthy, I wouldn't be shocked if they were able to make a deep run. They would benefit having to play in Orlando and not have to go to Toronto if they were to have to face them, because, you know, they certainly suck up there. But I'm just happy that it's back. I'm happy that finally there's some movement here. And do you worry about what this will do with any of these leagues, Chris, for the following season? Because in looking at the NHL, one of the things that I couldn't help be struck by a little bit is like just the timeline of it. If they were to start this in August, you figure it's a 2-month run for their playoffs, as it typically is. We're looking at maybe only like a month off between when this season starts up and ends, and there's a Stanley Cup winner they hoist the cup, they win. They'll be off for what, like a month, month and a half tops, and they're right back at it. Does that ultimately kind of throw stuff off for the next few years in any of these leagues?
Yeah, I mean, it could. You know, with the NBA, I think that they've been interested in, and they've investigated for a little while, the idea of starting their season in December. So I think whenever their season ends, you'll get a couple of months off, and they'll try this December thing and sort of see how it goes. You know, with the NHL, I'm not quite sure what the plan is there, but if they're just going to roll it back and basically say, hey, we're going to be back on the ice in October to start the 2020-2021 season, I think that could have an effect, particularly on older players and older teams like the Bruins. I mean, if the Bruins are fortunate enough to have another deep cup run, and then you have to turn around and everybody's a year older and sort of do it again, I think there's a lot of mileage on those guys at that point, and that would not benefit a team like the Bruins. I think that would be a detriment to the Bruins if the NHL is only going to have a month between the completion of this season and the start of next season.
Steven in Tewksbury on that very team, on the Bees. Hey, Steven, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, hey, Steve. What's going on? I know who you are. Yeah.
Not much. Hey, listen, I've been following you guys naturally since this pandemic hit, and, you know, I went at it with Felga there about a month or so ago about sports coming back naturally to the Garden. But how are we going to open up suites and some of these restaurants that, you know, that we service everybody? You know, a suite holds 20 people. Now it's going to be knocked down to 6? No way in hell can that go.
Well, is that, you tell me. I mean, you're one of the guys that works in those suites. Is that what they're telling you, that it would knock it down to 6 people in them? And
No, nobody said anything to us yet. You know, they're just saying, you know, they send us out a little notice, you know, stay strong. You know, we'll get back to work sooner or later. But, you know, when you guys talk about waiting in line at the concession stand, what are you going to do in a suite or at the sports deck and things like that? How are you going to keep six, you know?
Yeah,
that's the only thing that bothers me.
So. I don't know, Steve. Have you, if you don't mind me asking, have they taken care of you, like in terms of, you know, finances?
Yeah. Now that those games have finally been canceled, no. The NHL.
Well, supposedly Mr. Jacobs put in $1.5 million. Now that I got a notice the other day from somebody, and they said that they're going to start sending out some money to us. I don't know if it goes by how many years you've been there or whatever. So we'll just see what happens. But it had to have the six home games canceled before that $1.5 million would go into effect. So we'll see, and I'll keep you posted.
All right, good hearing from you, brother. Take care.
Yeah, I mean,
stay strong. Thanks.
It was really interesting, and that was my issue at the time with the Bruins plan, that
you had to wait till those games.
Yeah, I mean, how long have we been in this? When did the NHL shut down? The 13th?
Yeah. 3 months.
So how long have we been in this? And those people haven't gotten any of that money? I mean, you knew you weren't going to be able to play those games.
Right.
I mean, you knew 2 weeks in you weren't going to be able to play those games again.
They took the ice out within a week, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you said that. That's right. I remember you saying that on the show. Yeah, I mean, good for them that they're giving them the money, but to make them wait, that's just tough.
Yeah. And as far as, I mean, I can't imagine that, I'm sorry to say to Steve, like that, who works there, he's at the Garden, that's one of my guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're going to allow anyone back, you know, so.
I don't know. Did you see the thing in Texas? Governor Abbott saying, you know, 25%.
Texas cut from a different cloth.
Can be in the stadiums if they're outdoor stadiums. Obviously, you know, that doesn't impact arenas like TD Garden. But I think there are states, your Texas, you know,
Florida.
Your Florida. Yeah. Your Georgia, when they're just going to say, the hell with it. Let's roll. You know? America.
Well,
America says I can sit in these seats.
Probably take a look around at you know, the Ozarks last weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and some of the beaches in Florida.
Well, I don't think you have to go to Florida. I mean, I was last week, M Street Beach, there wasn't much social distancing happening there. So,
yeah, I could tell in my commute in last Friday on heading into the Memorial Day weekend, which was actual traffic for the first time in 3 months, how it normally would be on a Friday. I was like, oh. We've opened it up, apparently. People are, like, going down the Cape.
We've talked about this before. Yeah. You know, as much as I think some of us here maybe look down our nose at sort of, you know, a Florida or an Iowa, I'm like, oh, they're not taking this seriously. I think Massachusetts, sneaky bad at social distancing.
I think everyone is kind of now, they're taking the whole matter into their own hands. And it's like, well, we'll roll the dice and see what happens. We'll be back after this. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Is all these sports trying to get back, Chris. There is one that keeps getting in its way time and time again, and that would be stupid Major League Baseball. I want to get your thoughts on that. Coming up next, Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So Chris was unable to make his usual Friday Felger and Maz appearance yesterday. Was anchoring on WCVB Channel 5 last night, looking dapper as always. So you missed this, Chris. One of the things that popped up on Felger and Maz during the week was a poll that we put out as Major League Baseball continues to trip all over themselves and make themselves look worse by the day, as you have the NBA, NHL, all these other leagues dipping their toes in the proverbial pool of return. MLB just continues their dumb labor war. So, Maz put up a poll. I retweeted it. Show retweeted it. Just a simple question. Do you want Major League Baseball to come back and play in 2020? And I don't know if you were listening, but the results after 13,522 votes, the no's have it at almost 60%. I half in jest when Mike asked me off the cuff, like, you know, before even looking at the poll, what the numbers were initially. Murray, what do you think it's going to be? I was like 60-40. Now, I basically hate baseball. I would like it if it would go back to baseball, what it was 20 years ago, especially when we were growing up 30-some-odd years ago, Chris. Like we had mentioned, you know, in watching these old games, you've been saying you've been watching MLB Network.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In these old games. Yeah. At one point, I found myself transfixed by the Kirk Gibson home run game from 88, the 88 World Series between the Dodgers and the A's. It's a completely different sport, just the way that it moves.
Yeah.
Get the ball, throw the ball, put the ball in play. It's just fast. Games lasted like 2.5 hours.
And also the way they talk about it, it was so much more sort of relatable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now it's really been overrun by statistics.
So I half in jest said 60-40, because screw that sport, burn it down, and rebuild it and make it what it used to be. And it really did turn out almost 60-40. 58.6% of the respondents voted no versus the 41.4% of yes. The people have had it with this game. I don't blame them either. They've had it. The product mostly stinks. The players are obtuse. And in terms of this labor war, they both stink. And this is where the players, I do tend to agree with you and others that are on more on the player's side.
Yeah.
Where they've really played into the owner's hands is that most of these guys aren't the most eloquent. They come off looking like complete a-holes. So it's easy to just be like, F the players. They all stink. But after what Blake Snell said, too, with the I got to get mine, and yeah. Like I said to open the show in terms of anything right now during the pandemic, like I got to get mine-ism, like just don't even let that leave your lips, you idiot. They all look terrible. And they all seem truly determined to make sure that they don't play in 2020. And I don't know if that's something the sport can recover from.
Yeah, I don't know. I think baseball is sort of on the chopping block here. You know, they have to figure out a way to get back. They really should have been the first sport back, because unlike the NHL and NBA, they never even got to start their season. Even MLS got a few games in.
Right.
Baseball never started, so they don't have any of that revenue. And here was a golden opportunity for them to get back. If they could be the first ones back, you have all those eyeballs. People are just dying for sports. They're clamoring for sports. And now you're in a petty, messy labor war. And again, you know, I'm probably more sympathetic to the players than most, because I feel like this is unnecessary. And it comes down to this for me. Just common sense. Whatever the numbers are that the owners are saying, the owners are going to lose money. I do not deny that at all. They're going to lose money. But there's tons of businesses that are losing a lot of money during the pandemic. That's just the reality of it. So you're going to lose money. But what I don't believe is that they are going to lose more money playing games, paying players, than if they didn't play at all. Because if that were the case, they wouldn't even want to play the season. And that's where I think they're being disingenuous. That's where I think they're being dishonest. And if I were the players, I want to see those books and I want to see those numbers too, because there's no way that billionaire businessmen who are very smart would make a sentimental decision to just start the season because it's quote unquote the right thing to do. They want to start the season because they're going to lose less money if they play the games than if they don't play the games. But they're trying to sell it to the players that, oh, you know, if we play these games, you know, we're going to lose more money because we have to pay you. No, they're going to lose money, but there's no way that they lose more money playing the season and getting their TV money and getting the money from those ads. You've gone to Fenway Park. You know how they have like the green screen behind home plate?
Yeah.
When you're at the ballpark, you can't even see what that ad is. That ad is only for the person watching on television, and it changes every inning. So they're going to have those ads. They're going to get their money. Are they going to make money? No, they're going to lose a ton of money. But they're still going to be better off financially if they play the games. And that's where, if I'm the players, I call BS.
Do you think, though, that there are some owners that don't want it to happen?
Because
You know, like if you're a smaller market team or a team that's just, you know, get your head above water as it is, or your Marlins, your Cincinnati Reds, I'm sure that there's got to be some owners that are like, oh, it's actually better if we don't play. So then maybe that's why they put out that. Which is, I can understand why that's insulting to some. Like, that last offer, and you see what the tiered pay cuts would be like.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know.
That felt like, oh, they don't, that just reeked to me of, oh, they don't want this to happen. There's some of these team owners that would prefer the season not to take place.
That's probably true, but then I've also read that there's teams like the Tampa Bay Rays that wouldn't be affected as much as you think, because some of these teams, their attendance is so poor to begin with, that baked into their numbers, they know they're not going to have a lot of people in the stadium.
So it's just really all about the TV money.
So it's really all about the TV money.
Okay.
So obviously I think some of the smaller market teams, like a St. Louis, where they do make a lot of money because they fill that stadium all the time and they have the concessions and all that. There are also some teams like Houston that have really bad TV deals. So they'll be hurt by it. But I also think that when you break this down, a lot of this comes down to what it's come down to for years, Jim, which is it's not really about the split between owners and players. It's about the split between the owners, between the haves and the have-nots in ownership. And rather than fix that amongst the owners, it's easier to go to the workforce and try and wring the concessions from them to make everybody whole.
Yeah. It's just so perfectly baseball, though.
It really is. Like you said, obtuse.
Yeah. It's just
obtuse, out of touch, you know, completely intransigent, just, you know, just oblivious to what's happening really in the world and just mired in their own little labor fight, their own little labor mud fight.
And discourse is okay, you know, like in some of these leagues, you know, some of the players, they whether they're concerned, whether it's the financial aspect of it, the health aspect of it because of the pandemic, like, you know, those are conversations that should happen between the employer and employee. But this is just like, it's just one big bitch fest. Like, no, I'm not. Oh, it's just like, oh, God. People are hanging on by a thread with your sport anyway, in terms of the casual fan, and you're going to do this?
Well, every day that goes by without baseball, I think people get more and more used to not having baseball. And now the other sports are coming back, so you're getting excited about that. And it's like, well, where's baseball? You know, baseball's sort of on the back burner because people don't like labor fights to begin with. It's not fun to read about. It's not fun to follow. So you have that going on. But I think just the overall obstinance of both sides is really agitating. But again, I tend to side more with the players on this one just because they already negotiated. They would get a prorated portion of their salaries. And I think if the owners, Jim, came in and said, okay, here's what we'll do. We're going to pay you a prorated portion of your salaries, but we can't give it all to you this year. Some of this is going to have to be delayed, and we're going to have to pay it to you later. You know, we'll pay it to you over the next 2 years. I think the players would take that deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's an easy deal to make.
But they're unwilling to do that.
Correct.
David in Haverhill. Go ahead on MLB.
Hey guys. So what I think is happening basically is that the players and the owners, they're both annoying during these times, but I think that the owners are the ones who are messing up big time. Because, I mean, the players are going to have a contract where they make a ridiculous amount of money moving forward even after this year. But for the owners, now is the time to get as many viewers as they possibly can with all of what's going on in the world. And, you know, why not just take a little bit of a revenue, a decline this year and, you know, just say, hey, we need to do whatever we can to get back out there and get the eyes on these fans to save our sport for the future. Because in reality, the owners need the revenue for years to come versus the players are going to have a contract. So I'll hang up and let you guys talk.
I think that's a great point. And I think you can boil it down to the owners should be willing to accept short-term pain for long-term gain of the game.
Yeah, and I think that they've kind of blew that. Like, they've, considering the spatial aspects of baseball and the fact that the template has been set by some of these Asian leagues, you should already be back, or at least be put in motion that you're going to return. Instead, if they are to return, Chris, they're going to be up against the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs. So in a lot of ways, me being the eternal pessimist, I can't help myself, like, they're kind of doomed anyway. Like, you should have already started the wheels in motion to get your sport back. But instead, it's going to be rushed. You'll be up against more prominent sports that will have more eyes on them, that are better to watch anyway, just because the product's better. You're kind of screwed. So I do wonder, though, now if that's maybe one of the other things that some of these smaller market owners are like, it's too late anyway. Screw it. Put a bad offer in front of them and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all know deals get done around deadlines. I think MLB and the MLBPA, they sort of have this tentative deadline of June 1st to come up with something because they really need to get the wheels in motion for these spring training 2.0 situations. And how long do you think it will take? A month? So if they can get guys back, I don't know, let's say you get guys back June the 8th, it takes a month. So you could play games July the 8th. There's still a window for them to be back before the other sports, but it is shrinking rapidly.
I'll tell you what, though, despite my contempt for the game on the field, I got a copy of that MLB The Show for PlayStation 4. That game's a party, Chris.
Really?
Yeah, you wanted to pass your time with a pretty good video game, I'll admit.
Oh, okay.
MLB The Show is pretty, pretty good.
All right.
Give me your gamer tag so I can play. Nope, I do not play online. I will
now,
not play
you
online.
Now, when you play Gamzu, who wins?
No, he's one of the Overwatch nerds, Chris. Chris, I hate that I even know that. Yeah, it's Gamzu. He's like the Babe Ruth of video games. No, I don't play online. I'll never play online.
No?
I do not need a 12-year-old... calling me a gay slur as I play him in whatever video game it happens to be
online. And kicking
online.
Your butt.
Yeah, at 40-some-odd years old. I don't need that, so no.
I kind of want to play this game. So when you're playing, I'm just curious.
Oh, it's like, the balls. It's so good.
What flavor of Doritos are you eating, and what flavor of Mountain Dew do you drink?
I have Mountain Dew Rush, so I can play my video games until 3 a.m. No! It's not a sport. But it is a sport. You guys will eventually have to talk about the video games. It's what the actual players are now doing. The MLB players are playing MLB The Show. It's kind of 2020 in a microcosm, isn't it? As everything gets worse by the day, now you have the pro athletes playing the video games, and you have these networks trying to convince us this is what you should be watching. Oh, it's what a hell. And people wonder, if my friends wonder, why, Jim, why are you drinking all the time now? Because it's the only way to deal. And that's why. All right. I've said too much. We'll be back after this. A couple open lines. You want to talk about this, the return of these sports. I see a couple of you hanging about that. Mad at baseball. Mad at the world. I don't blame you. 617-779-0985.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Open the show talking about, the bigger picture and the world at large as protests continue throughout the country. Did discuss that kind of thing earlier. If you missed it, go check out the podcast, 98.5thesportshub.com or the app. But it is a sports program here on a sports show. And Chris didn't get to do his usual spot on Felger and Maz yesterday, so he was pent up and had some things to get off his chest. So we've discussed MLB tripping all over themselves, looking like fools, return of the NHL and NBA, some of the plans being put in place there. So those of you hanging, you want to weigh in, 617-779-0985, you want to join. We have a couple open lines. We'll go to Frank the Tank. Frank, it's been a minute. How are you doing? How's the mental?
Oh, my God. It's like I told you guys before. I mean, thank God for alcohol, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not that I didn't consider myself a heavyweight champion before, but I'm knocking it out of the park now. I mean, it's been great. Catching a buzz on, hurting nobody. It's been awesome.
But you did, and you put us, because we both know you. Chris and I have met you out. You know, we're pals. Like, you did make a not so subtle remark about suicidal tendencies that you've had, and look, it's a stressful time, but I hope you obviously are not being serious or on the phone with us now. But you okay?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. I mean, you know, it's tough. You know, it's tough dealing with three kids, three little girls, and a wife. So basically, it's four little girls, and you know, the constant just complaining and whining about things that are out of my control. It, you know, that's why I was, you know, kind of joking about the suicidal things. I wasn't really serious about it, you know. Any day on the grass is better than under it.
Okay. Yeah, it was a tone thing. After you hung up, we were like, oh, yeah. Geez, are you okay?
So. Yeah, no. Come on now. I mean, I wouldn't miss you guys at Beatles Christmas thing if that happens.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, what I was trying to say yesterday, I know my phone sucked and I apologize. I don't like the way the NHL is coming about it with 24 teams or even what Felger said yesterday, 20. To me, that's just dumb. You know, the way that the whole pandemic kind of cut the season short, the way that I look at it, the NHL should have just said, look, you know, we've got the two cities, three cities, four cities, whatever, of where, you know, we're going to play the playoffs. They should have just taken the 16 teams that would have made it in there. I understand games in hand and blah, blah, blah. But this is a different time. Take the 16 teams, have them go through their little mini camp or whatever, and then the East, the West on their two separate sites, have them play each other, you know, three, four games, five games, six games, seven games, let them build up, you know, their stamina, and then have the playoffs, you know, start like that. One plays eight, two plays seven, and just let it go. I understand the whole pandemic thing. You want to get teams involved, but too much time has passed. And I really don't want to jeopardize too much of the next season. So that's just my opinion on the whole thing, you know.
I understand it, Frank, and thanks for the call. And good to hear that you're doing better. I get the complaints on that some of these teams have no business being in what this playoff format would be, like the Montreal Canadiens, who were garbage and now will be factored in here. You could say the same thing for the Chicago Blackhawks, even the New York Rangers. But what do those three teams have? Big markets, heritage, you know, so from a business standpoint. So again, fan standpoint, Frank, I'm with you. Business standpoint, you're the NHL, and everyone's hemorrhaging money, no matter what company is or small business it is in America. But the NHL, company like any other, you got to try to recoup as much money as you possibly can here. You want those teams in those markets to be involved in this thing. Montreal, where they care passionately. New York, biggest media market that there is in America. Chicago, number three media market in America. Like, those teams stink, and I get your case for saying you have no business being here. But from a financial standpoint, you're the NHL. You have to have them involved.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, and there is a business element of it. There's no question about that. I don't know. I don't love this NHL format. I tend to agree, though, more with Frank. I see the business side of it, but I just feel like 24 teams, that's a little bit much. And the NHL, more than any other sport, got in its season. Now, was it the full slate? No, it wasn't the full slate. But, I mean, you're talking about teams that played 70 games. I mean, I feel like that's enough to sort of determine. I mean, if you want to have sort of the NBA thing and have a play-in here or a play-in there, that's fine. But 24 teams in a 31-team league? I mean, there's only seven teams going home? It goes back to what I said before about the NBA. And if they do the 22-team thing and having teams like Washington and Phoenix involved, just from a health and safety standpoint, explain to me how that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, again, it's, I get it. It doesn't. And if you see how they're doing the lottery, so those bubble, those teams that are in the round robin, they got knocked out, like, they still have a chance to get the number one pick. That there should be a
in the round robin or in the
round robin.
Okay,
in the round robin. Like, so, you know, a team like say Pittsburgh gets knocked out. No, because Pittsburgh would be involved in that. Like, they shouldn't have an opportunity to get the number one pick. There has to be a cap on that. Like, they can only move up like five spots.
Yeah.
I think that those seven teams that don't make the playoffs, they're the only ones that should have the opportunity to get the first three picks, I think.
And I'll be honest with you. I didn't even understand the explanation of that lottery. So I have, what you could be telling me is correct. And I trust you guys talked about it all week on Felger Mass. I read it on the NHL website three times and I was like, oh God.
There's a lot of minutiae in there. And I'm convinced it's so that you can get confused and not get mad. But when you really break it down, those teams that have the opportunity to play in the round robin, they get knocked out. They still have a shot at the number one pick. And I'm sorry, you shouldn't. If Montreal, Chicago, any of those teams, like, if it's more important to you, because those teams, I believe, fought to be in this thing because of their markets and because of their passionate fan bases, and they're trying to recoup money. I get it. But it's got to be one or the other. You either are in this tournament and you want to play in it, or you want to have an opportunity of the number one pick. It can't be both. And I don't think that it's fair to those other teams, those seven teams that don't make it, that those teams have the opportunity to get the first three picks. There should be a cap on it. It's stupid. Let's go to Graham in Haverhill on Major League Baseball. Hey, Graham.
Hey, guys. I'm just curious. I haven't heard anything from that ghoul, John Henry. I feel like I'm watching Interview with a Vampire every time that guy speaks, but curious about what side of the argument he's on in all this. But my call is actually about, I read that the Red Sox cut like 30 minor leaguers over the weekend, and apparently it was guys that they said were never going to make it. But, you know, the Red Sox, among other teams, have had some pretty good late bloomers. I think Daniel Navas and the Brock Holtz and the Brian Daboks of the world that kind of made it and never thought they would. So, you know, I feel bad for those guys. I don't know if you guys had any comment or if you saw that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I think you have to understand there is that those are guys that normally would have been cut at the end of spring training anyways. Now, they would be cut and then reassigned. There is no minor league baseball, so there's sort of like nowhere for them to go. I do know also that the Red Sox have pledged to pay their minor leaguers.
Yeah,
the $400 per week through the end of August, which a lot of teams are doing, but there are some teams that are not. The Oakland A's, chief among them, have told their minor leaguers that at the conclusion of this month, that's it. They're cutting it off. So, but in terms of, I think it's a little confusing. You know, you see the guys are cut, and obviously there's no minor league baseball, so you think, oh man, the heartless teams. But these guys would be getting cut anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like, I think it was Minnesota that was the first to do it, to break that mold of $400. They'll take care of the health insurance, do it through what would have been the minor league season through August 31st. The Red Sox came on board yesterday.
Seattle's doing it as well.
We haven't heard anything from John Henry. You had Robert Kraft on Fox this week. You've had other owners throughout professional sports talking about their return. Yeah.
Well, we should. I mean, I would love to hear from, and now, look, I would say this. You know, I know the Bruins were not thrilled with the way that their relief fund was portrayed by some, including myself, and they weren't thrilled with what happened with the furloughs and all that stuff, but they didn't put any ownership out there until after the fact. Well, the Red Sox just announced that they're going to do these salary cuts. There's no layoffs or furloughs, but there's salary cuts. I do think that you should have somebody out there explaining that and answering questions about it. A lot of teams are engaging in it. The Red Sox certainly aren't the only ones. Look at what's happened with Artie Moreno and the Los Angeles Angels. He basically gutted their scouting department, really a couple of weeks before the draft. But I do think owners have a responsibility to go out and explain those decisions to the public.
Long commercial-free segment coming up next. You want to join us? A couple of open phone lines. We'll talk about pretty much whatever. It's 617-779-0985. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Contractors and
you're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
A couple of NFL things wanted to touch on. First, Chris, you were mad that they didn't pass the 4th and 15 option, I guess, for lack of a better term, or the opportunity rather than the onside kick. That was put in front of the owners this week. They made some rule changes. But that one was the most prominent, and it got tabled for now, much like the overtime rule change that has been discussed before that happened last year. But this 4th and 15, you were fully for it. Why?
Because I just feel like the onside kick has sort of become, you know, for the most part, a fait accompli, a failure. It's gone down to 10.5% of recovered. I know the Falcons, I think, recovered
3-1 game.
Last year.
That number is skewed.
Yeah, by the Falcons. And I just look at, let me boil it down to this. Would you rather see some kicker trying to get the ball to bounce in a crazy fashion so that his guys can recover it without A, running start, which is what changed this, and B, being able to overload one side of the formation? Those two things completely neuter the onside kick.
Agreed.
So would you rather see that, kicker trying to get crazy lucky bounce, or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers on the field for another play or two?
I'd rather see the best players on the field for what would be a very exciting play. I understand that. Rather than nerd kicker, and it's a watered-down play now because they're trying to make the game safer, which I just find that inherently counterproductive and counterintuitive to how the game is played anyway. It's a violent game. It's going to wait. So stop watering it down. But be that as it may, I get it. I'm with you. But I also, you know, you mentioned Brady and Rodgers, and then there's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
4th and 15, Chris, for the great quarterbacks in the league, it's probably too easy.
But you could only do it twice a game, Jim.
Make it 4th and 25. I think it's a little bit more palatable.
4th and 25?
Yeah. 4th and 15, especially for a guy like Patrick Mahomes, it's probably too easy, Chris. I really
think so?
Yeah, and the watered-down quarterback beneficial NFL that we watch now, 4th and 15, it's probably not that difficult for some of these quarterbacks. I can understand why they tabled it for now. If they want to make it 4th and 25, there's a higher level of difficulty, or 4th and 20, more palatable.
Well, I'd like to see, like, what's the conversion rate on, you know, 3rd and 4th and 15 plays.
Someone had, it was like, for the ones that were 4th and 15s that were attempted last year, it was something like 23.7% or something like that. It was around, okay. It was hovering around 25%.
I mean, that's not, you know, look, if you want to make it, I won't quibble too much. I think 25 is too much, but if you wanted to make it 4th and 20, that's fine. I just think the onside kick has become basically irrelevant. And when teams are behind and they need to get the ball back quickly, you can't really do it anymore. And that has been one of the side effects of trying to make the game safer. And I think this is a way to sort of, you know, the teams can't recover the kicks anymore, but this is a way for the NFL to recover some of that excitement of a team being down, being able to get the ball back and sort of get some of that time back on the clock, so to speak, and be able to make a run at it. And I just think, again, you know, the onside kicks aren't being recovered. It's a kicker out there trying to get the ball to bounce all weird. I'd just rather see a Brady or Rodgers or Mahomes or Breeze, give them that shot, whether it's 4th and 15 or 4th and 20, and you can only do it a couple of times a game. They fixed some of the quirks with it. Before, they were worried, well, you could run time off the clock if you were ahead, if you were doing it. That made no sense to me. It was obvious from day one it should be a dead ball play. I think there are other things that are obvious, too. Like, no, you can't score a touchdown on this play. The idea is you get the first down and you get to keep the ball. We're not going to let you just score a touchdown on it. I just feel like they could have figured this out, and this is going to sound weird, but I think now's the time to experiment with this stuff because you almost get a pass on it if it doesn't work because it's the pandemic. Like, now's the time to think outside the box. Now's the time to try some things that maybe are a little different, and you're seeing that with the other leagues. And I'll admit, some of them I like and some of them I don't. Yeah. I know I railed about the NBA thing, but and the other thing I'll say is this, a variation of this rule we've already seen in professional football. Because the Alliance of American Football had this rule in place. And I think it's more exciting, and I think they could have instituted it this year, and I'm very disappointed that they didn't show the creativity, the imagination to do it.
Yeah, I was also ultimately for it, because I think you should be given another option because of what they've turned the onside kick into,
yeah.
Because it used to be great, and just from a strategic standpoint, we all remember coming out of the half what the Saints did to the Colts in that 09 Super Bowl, you know, and it like completely changed the complexion of that game.
Or what about Seattle against Green Bay in that NFC Championship game in 2014?
Yeah,
so the guy didn't recover the onside kick.
And so now you've essentially neutered it, like you said, or nullified that play because you can't run up and you can't, you know, so go back, which they're not going to, or have another option. So
they're not going to go back for safety. Yeah, they're absolutely not. That's never going to happen.
And you were mad about the Sky Judge thing.
Yeah, right? I mean, that seemed obvious. You know, I mean, again, I think
that's just them being cheap.
This is the NFL's problem. They too often they let perfect be the enemy of good or the enemy of better. Okay, maybe it's not going to be perfect, and maybe you'll have to work out some kinks. But you took away the pass interference thing, which was a disaster. And I understand why, because the coaches basically, revolted and forced that rule down the throat of the owners. And it didn't work out. It wasn't well thought out. However, the Sky Judge would still give you the opportunity to rectify some calls that are bad calls. And now I look at it and say, well, what's the mechanism now for this? That mechanism has to be there somehow. And I think the Sky Judge, another thing that we've seen, the AAF had it, the XFL had it, leagues have done it. It's been done before. I think the NFL could have figured it out. So I was disappointed they didn't do that. I mean, I thought that they were really conservative in terms of the rules. You know, it was, what was it? Defenseless player protection for kickoff and punt returners was one. They closed the Belichick-Vrabel loophole. And there was like one other thing they passed. They were all essentially really bureaucratic housekeeping.
Replays for touchdowns that
became permanent. Oh, replays of like scoring plays and other things that were nullified by penalty.
Correct. Yeah. And that's all it was. You mean the NFL being conservative, Chris? Oh, you don't say. Speaking of which, maybe the most infuriating thing of all, never mind those rule changes being tabled, is that David Portnoy, who we all know is the Barstool founder, Barstool Sports founder. If you didn't see this last night, it was one of the things that was that lit up the internet.
I saw it.
That wasn't, you know, completely horrific. He will not be visiting Roger Goodell's basement. He had won an NFL organized auction, $250,000, $250,000, that he had bid to watch a Monday Night Football game in the man cave of Roger Goodell. I don't know how you felt about this, but as soon as he won it, I was like, there's no shot in hell this happens.
I thought they might actually do it.
Well, if Roger Goodell wasn't such a humorless bore, who wasn't such an uptight a-hole, as words I'd like to use, but I would immediately be fired, he's just the absolute worst. And you just know that there's not a self-deprecating bone in the man's body. So I knew this wasn't going to happen. So they didn't allow him to end up doing this.
They said
this.
He didn't clear the background check.
Because he failed the preconditioned background check. So he was supposed to also get two tickets for a regular season NFL game. He's not going to get that. I can't play his whole rant, but $250,000 to charity. He said, I want it fair and square. They say no. Why? Because they're afraid of me. They're afraid of the brain. They're not going to have some fun with it. So F you, Roger Goodell. By the way, don't do charities and let the guy win it who you don't want to win it. That's on you. So now Portnoy has since tweeted that he's going to have an F Roger Goodell party around the same time.
Oh,
and it'll be like every other Barstool event. It'll be banged out. People will be all about it, and it'll be hilarious. It's just proof that Goodell in the league, as much as I love it, it's my favorite sport. Even though they keep, you know, how many times have I said on this show and others, Chris, that they got me over a barrel.
Oh, they do.
They keep watering the game down. They keep making me mad. I think it's run by complete idiots, but I'm still going to be there like a sheep. But this is just proof again. Like, you just don't get it. Like, you could, you know, Portnoy and Barstool's been a thorn in the side of the NFL and, you know, the Goodell clown shirts and all that kind of stuff. It's just, dude, can you just have some humor with it and have some fun with it? Like, you'd be able to, if Goodell feels like wronged by it and he's a big baby about it, well, you could squash this in 5 seconds by allowing Portnoy to come to your home and watch a Monday Night Football game. And like that, it's over. And it would benefit the brand, the NFL, and both brands. It would help, you know, it helps. And it's $250,000 to charity. So now what? You're going to go to the second place winner where it's a little bit less money, and what, Goodell ends up having a
bridge the difference.
That's a thank you. That's still not a great look. Like, just give it to the guy that won it. Even if you get beef with him, you can squash that beef by inviting him into your man cave to watch the stupid game. Oh, he just doesn't get it. He is just a humorless, humorless, want to use the word so bad, but I'd be fired immediately. It's what the Brits use as a-hole. It's theirs. A lot of people don't like the word. But that one, not a surprise at all. An hour ago here, Gasper Murray, I'll get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines, the latest there. Got one open line you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Write your calls right after this here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.